All right, that was a loss against the Thunder. But on another note, we're 41 games through the season, Doug, and we're going to take a look at all of the things that have happened for the Brooklyn Nets. Expectations, players in and out of the lineups, positives, disappointments, the spectrum of where the Brooklyn Nets stand halfway through their championship run, we think. Where do we stand? Let's take the pulse of ourselves on this one.
Oh, yeah. What game? I don't know. I watched the game, but I'm just going to say.
I blacked out. Let's start.
I'm done with that. No, halfway through the season, thought this was a cool time to go back and look at, you know, where we stand and things that we like, things that we don't like, you know, what to look forward to for the next 41. A lot to talk about here as we take a little bit of a retrospective look around this Nets season. Going to get into it all. But first, theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
That's right. It's the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. That is Doug Norrie, DFSR owner operator, blue checkmark certified fresh on Twitter. All your daily fantasy projections, FanDuel, DraftKings, he's got you covered. I'm Adam Arbrecht, OGP, One Giant Podcast with Andy Makowitz, breaking down the New York Football Giants offseason. And this is going to be a little bit of a midseason review for the Brooklyn Nets. Exactly 41 games through the season. We're at the midpoint, Doug. We thank everyone for making us their first listen of the day. And yes, Brooklyn Nets played the Thunder at home, though the results on the court may suggest otherwise. Takeaways from that, I guess, will be the jumping off point. But ultimately, we want to talk about the things that we liked about the first half of the season, some of the premises that we were given coming into this year, and really what the Nets have had to navigate over the first half.
Yeah, so this game against the Thunder, I don't know if there's a ton we can take away from it. They get totally smoked at home by an OKC team that also that stinks. So I don't think, you know, if this is a regular game, I think we're probably freaking out. I think we can call this anything but a regular game. The Nets, are really under it here in terms of the scheduling. This is their fifth game in seven nights, which is kind of already unprecedented. That's just too many games in too short a time span. And then you couple that with insane travel, like Sunday home, Monday across the country in Portland, then back to Chicago, then back home. And like, this doesn't even include the Milwaukee game. So that's just like not the kind of thing that happens in a typical NBA schedule. And I get the guys make a lot of money and stuff like that. So yeah. I'm sure that someone's going to ring in and say, oh, they're professionals, they should be able to play. Okay, I get it. You don't need to throw that in the comments. This is still when you're a really regimented group of super hyper tuned athletes, this kind of thing is totally off the wall. So I am willing to just kind of like lend up an excuse there and say, yeah, this kind of happens. They're playing with a skeleton crew. You lost. You'd like it not to be the other way. You like to be the other way, but I mean, can you really fault them? This is an insane schedule they've kind of had here. And I'm just not going to do a lot of takeaways from this game.
No, listen, ultimately getting the Chicago win, right? That's you take this loss at home. If it means getting that win and seeing kind of this complete product that we've talked about on the court, you have no Kevin Durant. And by the way, you'll take that the commitment to some rest here. No Kevin Durant, no Patty Mills, just for rest. Then it's LMA and it's Claxton due to injury. Obviously, no Kyrie because it's a home game. So you don't have a lot of players out there. Only thing I'm going to throw in from this game is a little bit of surprise in the decision from Steve Nash in the starting rotation. I thought that this game was ripe for Cam Thomas. He didn't play a lot of minutes the game before. He's a scorer. That's what he's built to do. You only have James Harden leading the way. It just seemed like putting him into the starting lineup with Deron and Kessler Edwards and whoever else you want out there, along with Harden, it seemed like the logical choice. And yet we don't really get him going until end of the first quarter, into the second quarter, essentially. But by that point, again, result probably was going to be the result. But this maybe gets into that bag of just interesting decisions sometimes from Steve Nash.
I think sometimes they default to these defensive first lineups that are hoping to create chaos and then hope that it can just get enough around Harden. I'm not sure like how many more examples we need to see that they just don't work. So, and I'm not to say that the Cam Thomas thing would have worked either necessarily, but at least you have another scorer. Like, we just have seen this too many times. And I agree with you here. If there is one takeaway from this game, I do think those were curious decisions around the Brown-Bembry thing, because it's like, hey, this doesn't work. And yeah. maybe they thought like the Kessler Edwards piece would stretch the floor a little bit and they would be able to create so much havoc in the defensive end that it would make up for it. But it just hasn't up until this point. And so at that point, I think I'm with you that I would have said, yeah, look, we can get, you know, three defensive first guys out there and then have Cam Thomas, right. who's kind of a defensive zero, but, and he, and even offensively, like he's a bad screener. Like he just like, he doesn't do a ton of other stuff except for score, but it's still fine because he can still hit threes for the most part. He can create his own shot. He takes a little bit of the burden off Harden where defenses can totally key in on Harden, which they clearly did even here with suboptimal defenders. So I'm totally with you. I really thought Cam would, I thought there was a chance Cam would get the start or at least see like first rotation minutes, which he actually yeah. didn't because they kind of kept Harden in. Well, they kept Harden in, but I thought they would maybe rotate him in to play alongside, but that wasn't really what they did. So I'm with you. I think Nash gets a little bit of a knock for that because it seemed like sort of an obvious choice to try it. But I'm not going to go nuts about this result because I just think it is what it is. And yes, I agree with you. I would have liked to see that.
The happiest part to me is the Durant piece looked like it was already coming here. And then add in the Patty Mills, right? We come off that last game where he plays 22 minutes, is super effective. And now you say, and also we're going to go ahead and give you extra rest so that this upcoming game is going to be a fresh Durant, a fresh Patty Mills. And I think that in that regard, even if we knock some of this rotation stuff, fine, again, skeleton crew, what you do like is just saying sacrifice the game. Now, the add-on piece is stop sacrificing maybe James Harden's minutes. He was there in the last game for 33, could have been 27. He's out there on the floor for a lot of minutes in this game as well. So maybe you want to try to reel those back too. But I do think that this is, if we're talking, you know, mid-season thoughts, it's try to carry some of this over, accept that rest is going to be needed, and it's okay. It's okay just to accept that you're going to lose some of these games. I think from an NBA perspective, the funny thing about this year and probably last year as well, remember, over the last handful of seasons, all the conversations have always been around, you know, scheduled rest games. You can't sit LeBron James. People pay for these tickets, whatever. Now, in the new construct of the NBA and the way the schedule works, it's like no one's going to bust your chops if you sit down a superstar because the schedule tells, kind of dictates that you can, right? Everyone understands yeah. 5 games in 7 days with that much travel. Yeah. Like you're going to see superstars sit down some games. It's just the nature of the way things have been run.
And I'm grateful for that too, because the schedule is kind of a beast at times. And yep. I think all these teams just got smart and said, this is crazy. Like we don't need to kill ourselves for these games. We can't sit out half the season, but we don't need to play every single game. I kind of credit the Spurs with figuring this out first with Pop. It was like a kind of long running joke.
Taking the slings and arrows for quite some time on it.
Yeah. Like if you do DFS forever, it was called, there was like a verb. They verbed his name into getting popped. Like that was what would happen when guys wouldn't play randomly and that was before they had lineup, like making sure you had to report your lineups ahead of time, which thankfully gambling got into this and kind of said, hey, you got to just tell everyone 30 minutes ahead of the game who's going to start. And actually it's funny because Nash is actually still one of the worst at this. The Nets are sort of notoriously one of the last to report some of their starting lineups across the league. Again, this is like all neither here nor there. But I think that in general, this shift in understanding what sort of needs to happen over the course of a very long season is a good thing for the game. When you agree to that it's better for the game, what you also need to agree with is that there's going to be nights where your championship level team is going to get maybe run by the OKC Thunder, like because right. that's just the way it is. And I think in previous years, this would have been an embarrassment of the highest level. I think most Nets fans will agree that the juice probably wasn't worth the squeeze in running everybody out for another night here. And it's funny what you say about Harden too, because with Harden, I'm like, maybe he's still playing his way into shape, so I'm fine with it. maybe he can go like 34. It's cool. But also I think there probably is a point where Nash and this group is like, hey, we still might actually be able to steal this too. Cause the Thunder do stink. Yes. And so there's a part where, you know, we're going to rest everybody and there's still a world where we go out with a W and we're not going to kill ourselves to do it. But it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. So I look, in the end, are we really going to go totally nuts about this one? No, I'm still riding high off the Chicago thing. So all good. Okay. I know we're going to talk about some of this other stuff, some midseason review stuff, you know, where we thought we would be given the context of the season. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. Bet Online wants to wish you a happy new betting year. There you go. As we continue our march toward the NFL playoffs, the NBA, the second half of the season, Bet Online, the number one spot for all your best sports wagering action for 2022. Getting used to just saying that year. The new year, it's a new updated desktop and mobile website over at Bet Online. You can sign up today. You can grab a welcome bonus, a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. But you have to use the promo code Locked On to get started. Just like our podcast network, Locked On. Football, basketball, hockey, boxing, UFC. Sprinkle in some Vegas casino games as well. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the game starts.
And as we say, you make us your first listen. Make Locked On Now your second listen. That's local coverage that only the Locked On Nets podcast network can give you, because we got all those experts. As I've been telling you, they work just as hard. Nobody harder than what Doug and I do right here on the Locked On Nets podcast, but just as hard. You get all those great insights from the league. You can hear about the Thunder upsetting the Brooklyn Nets at home. Go check it out free on all those platforms. Doug, midseason, what if I told you that 41 games into the year, Kyrie Irving would have played 3 games for the Brooklyn Nets, Joe Harris would have played 14 games due to injury, Nicholas Claxton just 20 games due to injuries and other concerns around it, and that the Brooklyn Nets would be 26-15, marginally, it looks like now, getting called third in the East behind the Miami Heat. But with everything that we've seen coming into this year, 41 games in, would you still say, yeah, I'll take that? That sounds pretty good to me.
Well, I'll tell you what I wouldn't have done was to put a mortgage payment down on the 56.5 over piece.
Like there has been some chatter on YouTube. People are familiar with the price point that we've gone over with entering this year.
I'm over it now, so because I think the ship has sailed on it. So if you look, but I'll use it to be instructive about where we stood at the time that bet was made, right? So at the time that bet was made at the 56.5 over win, taking the over on that number for their wins, I thought that was the lock of the century, frankly, because of the way the team was constructed, the way they were built to eat for like the regular season and beyond, like the way that they could just probably manage the superstar minutes. We already knew when they were all healthy, like how these three guys played together. And then if you just have two of them on any given night, you're still ahead of, 75 to 80% of the league. And so, if we look back to that time, that bet felt like, again, one of the easiest bets I've ever made in my life. Now it goes completely off the rails with the vaccine mandate and Kyrie's unwillingness to want to get the vaccine. But so I'm going to back that out to like, I'm using that to say like, this is where we were, right? This is where we were. I was sent out a tweet. It's like, the Nets don't have a weakness. I believe that at the time. If I look now, like you said, 3 games from Kyrie, nothing from Joe,
nothing,
very few games from Joe Harris, all this other stuff, like Nick Claxton being sick for whatever amount of time, for them to be second in the East, I think I would have gone back at that time and said, yeah, I'd be pretty good with that at this point, right? Yeah. If I felt like there was a world where it was going to keep getting better, and I do feel like that's the case, I think you have to be very happy about where they are at this point in the season, given all that context. Because remember, you have to frame things in the way you felt about it originally. Like, it's like sort of Bayesian, but not really. Like, your priors have to kind of come into where you stand now. And I don't think that there's a world where a Nets fan, knowing all this stuff, looks at this and says, where they are now is anything more than a win. You can just lose track of it once you're in it in the moment.
Well, that's, I think, a little bit of, because even to tie it in, coming out of this loss against the Thunder and off of the win over the Chicago Bulls, I think that's the perfect microcosm of why fans aren't having a reaction, right? When the Nets have been losing to bad teams over the course of this season, or falling behind, or having to get these late shootouts and going to overtimes against some bad teams, the fans have been borderline enraged around it. And I get it on a game-to-game basis, because you are still a better team, even with all the stuff that's happened. But because you get the big win against the big matchup and the team that you think has been a quality opponent this year, now it softens it, right? So that's like the perspective that's a little bit hard to maintain on a game-to-game, week-to-week basis, as opposed to your point, just remember where you were at the start of the season and the expectations around the roster and who was going to be available to play. If you pull out all those pieces, I don't know how you can't get to this point and say, wow, because by the way, I'll flip it, because we're going to get to some kind of roster and player takeaways here in the last segment, but I'll flip it. what did you think when you, once you heard no Kyrie for home games and no Joe Harris due to injury in the Claxton piece, where did your mind go about around what the potential was over the course of the first 41 games? Because the results now being what they are, and they've maintained a high ranking in the standings. So that's what's giving me that expectation. Yeah, you still have Kevin Durant. You still have James Harden. By the way, let's throw in this too, right? James Harden being in whatever shape he was in coming to the year, coming off the hamstring injury, and whatever we want to couch it in, him adjusting his game, the new calling style, the referees. What was that? 15 games? 20 games almost? The first, you know, first 20 games was everyone saying, like, can James Harden manage to figure out basketball anymore? Like, that's as big of a factor as anything else that we talked about too.
It's so funny because, like, this is just a testament to how long the season is, because I just totally forgot that that was even a thing. And that was, like, such a huge thing. We did multiple podcasts. I think we did, like, a week and a half about that, about just like, what's wrong with James Harden and what's going on and, like, you know, the foul thing, and he's going to get used to it. And it's just, it's a nice reminder when you look back at, like, this at the halfway mark here and say, okay, yeah, remember the thing. It's actually a good reminder, too, about, hey, remember the thing we thought was the biggest deal ever not that long ago? Like, not even a season, like, a, you know, a fall to winter season ago, and that we thought was the biggest thing ever, and now nobody talks about it at all anymore.
This
it's
like
a good reminder,
breakup, right? This is a high school relationship, right? Remember when first,
I was like, yeah, I dated Ashley Miller for like 6 years, I think. And it's like, no, I was like 2 weeks.
Right? I may never love again. I mean, that's the bottom line here.
When I look back at it, I'm like, I think that was like 9 days. Like, I don't even know how long it was. It felt like 2 years, but
I dated Susie Sally something Samsonite. It was something with an S. I swear, I loved her.
No, but like, but
that's what happens.
It's a good reminder to say that the thing you think is like is such a pressing thing in the moment typically ends up not being that big of a deal. And so now some of these things are macro issues. Like, some of these things might not be solved. Like, we don't know when Joe Harris is coming back. We don't know if the Kyrie issue is going to work itself out before the season end, before games really start to matter. So some of these are going to be ongoing things. But in general, I think it is good to look back and say, hey, you know, are we as concerned with some things as we were at the beginning of the year? No, we're not. Like, some of these things have just worked out. And I think if I just, you know, just to kind of wrap this all back into a bow, but I think if I was to look back and say, these are all the contextual things that have gone on with this team since the beginning of the season, are we comfortable just where they are now, right? Yeah. At 26 and 15. Yeah, it's probably not an ideal record, but in the context of the rest of the league, by the way, we didn't even mention all like everyone missing half the season because of COVID. So like that was the other thing.
Or like, that.
Right. Yeah, except for that, Ms. Lincoln, how was the play? Like, so except for those things, I think once you factor all that in, say, you know, a game back or game and a half back in the East of a team that they just waxed when they were full strength. Now you have to feel really good about where they are when you boil it all down.
And I think the other piece of it is, too, that I mean, we're not putting this in the context of, oh, only the Brooklyn Nets have dealt with any of these, you know, issues. Everybody loses players. Everybody has dealt with COVID and the protocols, obviously. But when you look around the league, the teams that you expect to be there at the end, and this is what you learn over the first 41 and probably even earlier than that in the season, is they figure out a way to navigate through it, right, to manage through the issues that come up. You look out at a team like the Lakers, whatever the expectations were coming into the year, they're a 500 team now, and they're trying to figure out what is going to be the solution for this team in the second half of the year to make sure that we're competitive. At no point along this way do I think, although maybe some outside voices have suggested it, we've always pointed back to Vegas numbers and let them guide your perception of a team, but there's been no point over the first 41 that I've had this sense of, boy, I don't know if I look at the Brooklyn Nets and think that they're still a title contender. I've always thought that over the first 41 games. Do I think now, again, are there still areas I'm concerned about? Do I want to know about injuries and players getting back and figuring out rotation? Sure. But there's never been a point where I sat here and thought, I don't know, first round knockout probably. Maybe they take a team to six. We're like, no. I expect them to be playing the Bucks, you know, in the Eastern Conference Finals or whoever may be there. Like, that was always the expectation with or without the complete roster, with or without Kyrie coming back now part-time. So that I think is the safety valve to always pull back on and take the step away. Cause I do, just like a lot of people, game to game can have some pretty heavy reactions that ultimately fall by the wayside after 2 weeks, after 10 games, after 41 games.
Well, for sure. We do this every single day. So like if you do this every single day, you're going to have big peaks and valleys in terms of your emotions. That makes sense. Like, fans do the same thing. They watch every game. So every day they have a new opinion. That's just the way it is. I will say I'd rather not meet the Bucks earlier than or rather not beat the Bucks early, and would rather meet them later because they just they came and just completely smoked the Warriors tonight. I know the Warriors without Draymond Green, but it basically turned that one off at halftime. All right, we're going to get into some of our biggest surprises, biggest disappointments here for the Nets through the first half of the season. First, it's a new year. It means New Year's resolutions. If you're like me, you're trying to get fit. It's a little harder than you think it would be in this advanced age. That's why you have to turn to Built Bar. The protein bar tastes like a candy bar, but it's better because it's actually healthy. Built Bar helps you kind of stick to those New Year's resolutions that you maybe made about getting healthier, trying to eat better, try to stick away from some of that, you know, ultimate sugar stuff that can be really, really enticing, especially around this time of year. Built Bar has figured it out by making the flavors great, but the stats even better. 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, just 4 net carbs, 17 grams of protein, all the stuff that growing body and growing, I think you know what I mean by that, needs. Compare that to a candy bar, which usually has 240 calories. They even say in that number, 30 grams of sugar. I'm about to throw up dozens of net carbs. That's where Built Bar has you covered. And like I said, the flavors, coconut almond, peanut butter, brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream. They figured this out, folks. They covered it in chocolate and made it healthy for you. Go to built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off of your order. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com.
All right. So then the other piece of it is coming now at the midway point of the season, when you look back at the first 41 games, personnel-wise, roster-wise, performance-wise, you said biggest surprises, biggest excitement, biggest disappointments. What's the first thing that jumps out to you over the first 41? Let's start negative so we can go positive on the back end. What was the thing that has you scratching your head and maybe being a little concerned going into the next 41?
Okay, so my biggest – so I guess we're saying biggest disappointment here. My biggest disappointment or, like, surprise on the negative side was how little the Nets have gotten out of some of the veterans that were brought in here to, like, kind of shore up some pieces of, like, losing Jeff Green and, like, just needing, like, veteran presence, sort of, like – good wing basketball, because they've gotten just nothing out of some of these guys. Like Millsap, I get that he put up a nice stat line here against OKC, and I defended him earlier in the year because I thought there was some stuff in the defensive end that was, like, still really encouraging. He's been basically a zero, is out of the rotation. James Johnson has really not given much. And so these, you know, I know that's just two examples, and they've gotten something from some. Bruce Brown's given them almost nothing this season, I would say. And so
he's a big one for me, just from where he was last year to this year. You just assumed that he was safe in his role and then he was important role to fill here. And that's as much as performances of some of these players is also just the reality of, maybe you don't have this critical piece to what the Nets want to accomplish.
Yeah, like Blake has had to sit out multiple, like, you know, a long stretches of games because he just looked like total dust. And so I think that part, which seemed like it was going to be such a positive, I thought, around some, like, you know, the veteran savvy, just enough left in the tank, because we had some clues about what Blake was able to give that when he wasn't in a huge, like, overextended role last year. We're like, okay, this is good. Like, these guys aren't overextended. They're just going to be able to lean into these sort of, like, support roles. The fact that the Nets have gotten so little out of that has been, I'm very surprised by that, because I liked a lot of those signings at the time, and just watching it play out, like, has just been at times been kind of brutal to watch. Frankly, it's been not even bad. It's been like some of the play has been such a negative that it's just been really, really surprising. So it's been counteracted by some of the other good things, but I think in general that is just not. You know, outside of the early mid-range shooting, they got out of the Aldridge, and obviously the flamethrower stuff that they got out of Mills at times, a lot of the off-season moves have not really worked out all that well outside of, like, those primary two guys. I'm very surprised by that.
Javon Carter, I think, is...
Oh, I mean, that's another one. The difference between him, my expectations, low on him. My expectations weren't through the roof on any of them, but I thought there was going to be this, you know, sort of like this gathering of all these little skills that we're going to get from these guys. But they really haven't even gotten that. They've gotten so little from all of these veterans that it's been kind of startling.
Yeah, I think that's more to the point too. And we get to some of the positives. There'll be some veterans we mentioned there, but it's almost in that same vein of Jeff Green last year and then Blake Griffin last year. It just felt like, oh, veterans will just come in and they'll fill these nice little roles around the stars, and it'll all always be good. And for the most part, championship caliber teams with superstars, that's usually it. That usually is how it works. So the fact that an organization, or let's say a GM like Sean Marks, who has usually been so on point with a lot of these moves and smart to get off of guys. I was fine getting off of Landry Shamet, right? Because he didn't fit and the 3-point numbers weren't good enough. And yet some of the pieces you brought in to replace them haven't necessarily been as successful. I think I'm willing just to leave my biggest disappointment kind of in that, because it's almost couched in the idea of I'm disappointed that the organization maybe over-evaluated some of the veteran talent that they were going to either be returning or acquiring to fill out this roster that leads to some of the issues that you've had over the first 41.
Was that yours? Like, it was like in that sort of like that range that were like,
Cause to me, it's the idea that there were other moves to make. We know where how they are financially, and, you know, a little over $4.6 million for Bruce Brown, but that's money right there. Blake Griffin at two and change. Now, it's couched inside veteran minimums and all the stipulations with the luxury tax and all that stuff, but it doesn't mean that the Nets weren't capable of maybe manufacturing X amount of dollars to obtain one player. And what level would he have been able to play to, and how much more important would he have been? If you're going to spread it out across James Johnson, Javon Carter, Bruce Brown, Blake Griffin, and then these others that have been positives, like LaMarcus Aldridge, like Patty Mills. If you're going to spread out the money like that, then you need to show me that it was acceptable to do it. And so far, there's far more veterans that are on the wrong side of the ledger than being on the positive, I think. So that's disappointing given our confidence in Sean Marks in this organization. I think that has to be the overarching disappointment to me. I mean, I guess I'll add another one. I'm disappointed that I haven't seen Kyrie for 41 games.
Obviously that's the biggest disappointment of the whole season, is that this has worked out the way it has. I think that just kind of goes without saying. So that would have clearly been mine too, but
right.
we're at a point where we can't just beat the dead horse anymore. So
No, 100%. That's why you don't bother with that. But on the positive side, then, the Nets' ability, and you and I talk about this a lot, and I think 9 times out of 10, you're couching my expectations on young players in the right mindset of takes time, these guys have to develop. And guess what? Tonight, the game against the Thunder was a good example of how when you take away two stars off the court, all of a sudden the rookies have some of their weaknesses exposed, some of those deficiencies come to light. However, while I punish Sean Marks for some of the bad moves I think he made, I thought they executed the draft to perfection. I thought that they brought in guys that make all the sense in the world, and not just the short term, but even the long term for the Brooklyn Nets, like De'Ron Sharp and Cam Thomas and Kessler Edwards. They all can have long term roles for this team beyond the stars. Not that we want to think at that point right now. So that was an absolute accomplishment. And the couple of veterans that really have obviously worked out, the return of LaMarcus Aldridge out of retirement, and then, of course, Patty Mills. And it's easy to wipe away a lot of the veteran mistakes that you brought in over the offseason, because Patty Mills has been nothing short of excellent and is going to be nothing short of critical for the Nets winning a championship.
Yeah, that was mine too. Mine was just that the young players have exceeded expectations, especially when you compare them to their draft slots. Like what you really need to do when you go with young guys is that you have to remember is like not so much like where you are in the development cycle with these guys, but it's like where you got them in the draft. And because historically, guys who are drafted lower in the draft don't last in the league that long. Guys that are drafted higher in the draft do last in the league that long. That's just a numbers game. It's not 1-to-1, but it's, you know, you bet if you were starting to bet your life on it, you would bet your life on the guys further toward number one than toward 30. And what we've seen from the Nets is that they are just actually very good at this piece. They're very good at identifying talent that's going to fit, that identifying talent that's probably undervalued in some way, that other teams don't want to take a stab on because it's like not going to be sort of like generational talent, or it's not going to, they're trying to like fit every need, and the Nets don't need to fit every need. They can just fit like slots of kind of players. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, you can just take a slot on a guy. And so
Bembry, by the way, throwing Bembry, I want to make like almost slip past him, right? That's another one that captures in the positive. Sorry, I know it's not rookies, but
yeah,
I just completely cut you off to talk about something that wasn't really in the line of thinking we were going on. Let's get back.
We'll get notes on that. No, yeah. It's all good. No, so anyway, and I was wrapping this up because I was just going to say that, like, I think that an organization like the Nets, one thing you can really hang your hat on for the future is that, like, if you can identify, because they've just been really good at drafting. He's got the Claxons, like a total steal, right? Also, yes. where they got him in the draft. And so, I mean, it's not all perfect, but by percentages, especially when you compare the Nets drafts, like draft picks to the slots to the rest of the league, they've gotten a lot of value over drafting basically low for the last, I mean, how many years? When was the last time they had a lottery pick? Like they haven't, it hasn't happened for this team because they've been kind of good slash great for a bunch of years now. And so the fact that they've been able to identify talent that's already sort of like looking like it's NBA ready ish, which is all you can ask for guys at this age from where they got him in the draft, that's nothing short of a huge win. And I'll credit him because he put this out there, and I don't want to pretend like I came up with this, but Matty Brooks made a good point about like the second round picks that the Nets had to give away just to get off the DeAndre Jordan contract. I still would have done it, but
yeah,
second round picks in the hands of this team is much better than a second round pick in the hands of another team. Like we've already seen that, like, you know, having more draft picks for the Nets is going to work out because they just have been very good at this draft piece. Like the draft thing plus the way they develop players is just a surprise that you kind of forget about once you learn about the big three. So that's where I am with this team in terms of the young guys.
And it's interesting too, because one of the things we'll talk about a little bit in the weeks ahead is that trade deadline looming. The Nets only have 4 draft picks in their stockpile right now. And to your point, right? Well, you're trying to win a championship, who cares about the assets? And yet we're seeing the sample size of why they can be a little bit more valuable for certain teams than others, depending on how you execute it. The last thing I want to just, I brought up Bembry because we hadn't mentioned him yet, even if it was a bullet through the conversation, to say out of all these guys, you know, Patty Mills and LMA, including Bembry, and then all these rookies, who's been the one that's impressed you the most over the first 41? It's been relatively small on the rookies, obviously, so it may be hard to go with one of them, although I think, you know, their upside is easier to look at than some of the results from these veterans. But who's been the most impressive to you based on expectations coming in and then what you've gotten in return? Because for me, I'll just say, like, for like LaMarcus Aldridge, I've been incredibly impressed with him. And also, I think he's pretty much hit the mark on what my expectations were for him, right? Be a guy that hits the mid-range, a little bit of spacing, maybe a little more impressive on the defensive end than I anticipated. But that's not necessarily going to be my number one because I had a fairly strong threshold of what I wanted him to do coming in.
Yeah, see, it's funny about that. I'm not sure there's like one guy, because like the obvious answer would be Mills, but I think we thought this is what we're going to get from him. So I don't think that's the answer. I don't think I can say it about Bembry because I think it's been good slash. I mean, it's been good for what they pay him, and it was a non-guaranteed contract to start. So I think that like it's all good. I don't know. I'm going to leave that incomplete. I know that's like not the answer. Yeah, that's not good. We'll get a note on that one too about TBD. About just not having an opinion.
but I think that's fair though, because you're on Patty Mills. You're right. Like you had a high bar, or everyone regarded him incredibly highly. And we all kind of had this thought, once you put him with Harden and KD and, you know, and Irving, you know that his game is going to look that much better. So I think that it's hard to really say, I was blown away by the fact that Patty Mills looks better with superstars like that. I kind of get, maybe I'll put it in. I'll have fun with it and say it's Kessler Edwards. He's the lowest draft pick outside of David Duke Jr. being an undrafted free agent they brought in. But as you said, where the draft stock is, De'Ron Sharpe and Cam Thomas are both first round guys. Kessler Edwards is a second round pick. The fact that we just saw him start NBA games for the Brooklyn Nets, and one of them actually being one with everybody else around him and available, that has to be the most impressive thing. Now the sample size is so small that he can take that out. He can take that away from me at some point, but I'm impressed in both him and ultimately, maybe this is a little bit for the fans to think about. I'm impressed that Steve Nash has gotten to the place where he's starting and using these guys. Sometimes I think, you know, you want to see something different. You want to see something new. We want to see the young players. I want to see the young players, but getting them ready to play so their best foot is forward when they get out there is important. And now when you're excited about the results, I think it's because they took their time getting them there. So I've been on Kessler Edwards. I'll stay on Kessler Edwards. And I hope that what we see over the next, you know, 41 is that he entrenches himself into the starting rotation and becomes a critical member of this championship team. Like that's the dream for me in the second half anyway.
All right. This is what you do. You go over to YouTube, you throw in your biggest disappointment, your biggest, the thing you've been most surprised about, thing you like the most from the season, thing you like the least about it, throw it in a YouTube comment. YouTube comments were absolutely popping off again today. Yeah, you got to go over and subscribe to the YouTube channel. I think we had 50 comments or something like that in there. Just all over the place, you know, good stuff, bad stuff, like with the teams, just like a cool conversation. So make sure you're over on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. I'll put the link in the show notes. This episode and more will all be up there. So subscribe to the Locked On Nets YouTube channel.
You can also say you're surprised by how much you love this podcast, right? I mean, that's something that exists for people, I think. So don't be shy about that either.
I'm not surprised by that. I knew I was going to love it.
That wasn't a you specific, Doug. But as we get out the door and we talk about all the things the Nets went through over the first half of this season, you know, I'm supposed to be juggling 10 bowling ball pins engulfed in flames over my tail at this point. Well, you'll just have to imagine that part. That's Nutmeg the dog from Isles of Dogs.
Oh, one of the all-time great poets. We will be back. Was Anderson? We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.